Good evening. Welcome to the Salier Report. Today is November 7th, 2019. This is Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. Well, I'm back in Hickory Valley from Paris, and Nina Hein has written an incredible food for the soul on our visit to the Da Vinci exhibit at the Louvre. I want you to go check out the column. It's amazing. It's packed with unbelievable pictures. There's tremendous eye candy. We went to the Louvre on Monday. On Tuesday, we went to the d'Orsay for the Degas exhibit. It was incredible. You can't imagine how many people on a Monday and Tuesday were trying to get into those two museums, not just to the Da Vinci or the Degas, the full museum. It's incredible. Don't ever think that people don't love high culture. They do. Anyway, check out the column. It's got some beautiful, beautiful artwork. It was an amazing exhibit. And it links the latest Food for the Soul column, links to all six columns that Nina's written on Da Vinci this year. And of course, we're celebrating Da Vinci all year long. And it's his work and story is, for me, just unbelievably inspiring. I'm going to see 50 subscribers very soon, on November 15th, next week, on Friday in Portland. I'm driving out, so I'll be driving all week, and I'll talk to you on next Thursday from someplace west of the Mississippi. But I'm looking forward to getting out on the road. I love doing that, and I can't wait to see everybody in Portland. It's going to be a great group. And then I'll be in Malvern, Pennsylvania on Friday, December 20th. We had an incredible group last year, so we said I got to do it again. So I look forward to seeing you. And then, of course, the Lake Constance Opera Hang. We have a video with Jason and Ulrich and I talking about biophysics and what we're going to be talking about. That's August 2020 at Lake Constance, and incredible music. And it's an incredible group coming. Because that's a major trip, if you have any questions for me or customer support, just send them to Ask Catherine. We'd be happy to give you a call and tell you a lot more if you need to know more. Anyway, there's a website and a video, so check it out. Wrap-ups, I'm just finishing up, finally, the Will ESG Turn the Red Button Green? That has been the most exhaustive research I've ever done in my life, and it's a very important topic. It's a topic that put a lot of people to sleep, and it was very hard to write and stay in a state of amusement. I failed maybe several thousand times keeping my state of amusement, because if you look at how ESG investing is being abused and misused, it's pretty frightening, but it really gives you an amazing insight into what's going on in the world. We've also shifted production of our hard copy to the company who makes our videos. And I spent a lot of time with Robert Duper in the Netherlands working on that. And I'm very excited about what we're going to be doing on the wrap-up. So it's delayed everything, but I appreciate your patience. And as soon as I send ESG off to the printer, then the other wrap-ups will roll out much faster succession. So get ready to get them to hit your desk. Boom, 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 boom. Our theme tonight is some serious talk about demographics and resource wars. We are now going to start feeling the pinch of peak everything. We tried to print our way out of it with monetary bubbles. And this is going to be a tough change because most of the people in the Western world grew up in an age of abundance, and we're moving now towards an age of relative scarcity. Part of the issue is we see continued growth in the population and growth of a growing global middle class because of globalization, and that makes the competition for resources more significant. Now, we've tried to print our way out of it. There was a great piece in the Zero Hedge today. Let me just read it. What is a good way for the Fed to deflect attention from the fact that after a decade of liquidity injections, it has created the world's largest asset bubble? Why point to another even bigger in its view? Why not point to an even bigger threat? And with green bonds, unlimited fiscal deficits, and MMT all the rage, if not today, then soon, what better boogeyman for the Fed to wave in front of the public than the hottest topic, so to speak, of the day, climate change? Speaking at GARP, Global Risk Forum, New York Fed Executive Vice President warned in his prepared remarks that climate change, not, say, acid bubbles created by his employer, is a major threat that risk managers can't ignore. The U.S. economy has experienced more than $500 billion in direct losses over the last 5 years due to climate and weather-related events. Of course, no discussion here of weather manipulation. In addition, climate change has significant consequences for the U.S. economy and financial sector through slowing productivity growth, asset revaluation, and sector reallocations of business activity. Of course, financial fraud isn't a problem. Anyway, but we're seeing a real marketing of different excuses for getting people to change in the face of that scarcity rather than tell them the truth. We've got climate change. We have ESG, we have the war on terror, we have all sorts of incoherent explanations to avoid the truth that the leadership is seeking much tighter central control for a variety of reasons. One, of course, is the risk management issues related to more, more people and more resource wars. Anyway, you know, we see other things. We see turning off electricity. They say it's because of fires. I wonder how much of it is problems with the electricity system and problems with trying to produce a high percentage of your electricity with renewables, which are not as reliable. Of course, we need to dramatically reduce consumption because of climate change, not because of hyperinflation coming from quantitative easing and the financial coup. Cow farts are causing climate change, so you need to stop eating meat, and that's going to cut demand rather than cause the prices to inflate. Reduction of life expectancy is another one. So we're seeing opioids, narcotics trafficking. That's been happening for a long time. Anyway, the pressure is increased by immigration. The U.S. is adding 1.5 million immigrants a year legally, probably 3 million total. Most of the immigrants coming to the U.S. are more easily assimilated than other places. So our immigrants are either educated or coming from Christian countries. Europe is having a lot more challenges with Muslim or African immigrants who are not as easily or not as willing to assimilate. But there are more people. I remember telling you a couple years ago, I was at one of the mining conferences in Canada. And basically, as you watched the presentation, what you heard was all the mining companies had to go further, take more political risk, dig deeper for less, you know, for 1 ounce of gold, you had to dig up a lot more rock. So it's why you hear talk of asteroid mining and discussions about new sources from space-based solar or energy from cold fusion. Of course, energy is the big wild card. We are deeply dependent on fossil fuels. Renewables only work where the sun and wind will support it. Now, the renewable prices are coming down, but again, it's nowhere near as ubiquitous, and it doesn't produce liquid transportation fuel. And our transportation system is set up primarily to run on liquid fuel. So the question is, can breakthrough energy make a big difference? Very big wild card if you look at the next 10 to 20 years. So now, what does that mean to you? I want you to start paying serious attention to the energy and water systems for your home and community. What are your risks on the road ahead, given your location? And what do you need to do about ensuring your access, particularly if energy and water prices skyrocket? And those tie back to food, because agriculture is highly dependent on energy and water. It was so interesting in France and Paris to observe many of the immigrants. Generally, the immigrants coming in are typically much more knowledgeable about the real deal than the sort of G7 populations. I had a funny conversation. I was sitting in the hotel at Charles de Gaulle Airport. I was stayed at a hotel close to the airport the night before because I had a flight out early in the morning. And I had two clearly very successful African entrepreneurs sitting at the table next to me. And the waiter said something about the importance of climate change and saving the planet. They just rolled their eyes and started laughing like, you guys don't really believe that. It's so funny to watch them. A lot of the immigrants just look at the people in the G7 nations as so exceptionally naive. It's interesting. By and large, they work very hard. They ignore all the shriekometer spin, and they stay focused on family and family wealth. And if you watch how the smart ones use their time, it's a reminder not to waste any of your time on the Shriekometer, because they don't. I put some links in the subscriber links for This Money in Markets, because I want you to start thinking about resources in your area. And generally, we're coming into a period where in scarcity, generally the best investment opportunity, if it's possible given your unique situation, is to provide your own resources if you can, than to invest in, you know, assets run by a stranger. So I put in links, different statistics on energy, a link to the CIA World Factbook, which will give you a good sense of the basic data of whatever country you live in. I love to read the World Almanac every year. I tend to get it and then read it slowly during the year. Sometimes I'll sit down in the jacuzzi and spin through a significant part of it. But it's always good to have a pretty good understanding of the basic data of natural resources around you, whether, you know, it's in the world, whether it's in your country, whether it's in your community. I also put a link to the Unpacking Your Local Financial Ecosystem, which is a Salary report we did 2 years ago that'll help you really work through how to find all the data for your community. And I can't stress to you enough what a great use of it is of your time to really get literate about the resources around you. So one subscriber asked me about a Salary Circle, and that's one thing a Salary Circle can do. It's like a financial action club. But you get together and you just help each other learn about how all the resources and money and governance works in your area. So bottom line, start getting serious to understand the demographics and the resource allocations around you. Money in Markets. I'm working from Wednesday close, and again, we're looking at total returns for year to date. The U.S. dollar now up 2.12%, still holding strong. Fed bumped at the end of October, and they are predicting they're pausing, but they've clearly made clear by their actions they're going to do whatever it takes to keep things liquid and keep things going. It's one of the reasons we see investors have so much cash, but not a whole lot of original investment opportunities other than buying and selling and trading each other. So U.S. investors are sitting on more than $3 trillion of cash. It's a big pile. Interestingly enough, banks are offering cash rewards up to 6% on an annualized rate. It looks to me, and I'm guessing just from the anecdotal information I have, that Chase started the sort of a war by offering $600 for a $50,000 deposit that you left for 90 days. And then the small banks came back with $800 to try and sort of deflect the tender by Chase to try and purchase their deposits. My guess is this is does not reflect a problem with liquidity in the market. This is the big guys trying to drive the little guys out of business. We're in an unprecedented effort by the big guys to eat up every dime of market share. It's what I told you a couple years ago. The multinationals are going to come back and try and go deeper here in North America. The fixed income, the Treasury is still going strong. The long Treasury ETF up 15.84%. The intermediate up 8.76%. Big headlines, the U.S. debt has now surpassed $23 trillion. If you go to the U.S. dollar debt clock, what you'll see is the $23 trillion is just the beginning. There are trillions more of outstanding liabilities. The bond aggregate up 8% and junk still flying at 12.42%. It just defies reality. But actually what it represents is confidence in the market that the Fed's going to constantly keep everything bubbled. Goldman estimates that the funded status of U.S. corporate defined benefit systems have dropped to 86%, primarily because the negative interest rates, low interest rates. Low interest rates are really killing insurance companies, they're really killing banks, they're really killing savers, and really hurting the pension funds. Lagarde came in on November 1st as the new head of the ECB from the IMF, and began right away with saying that their ECB's focus was going to be on keeping employment high. Savers are not the priority. So that's a very bad sign for the future of interest rates. And I would expect a fair amount of negative interest rates to continue in the Europe sovereign bond market. We should be up at this point to 17 trillion in negative interest rates bonds, which is incredible, including, I think, over a trillion in corporate bonds, which is even more incredible. I just went through an article that listed about 20 different negative rates at different Swiss banks, so doing everything they can to keep money out of cash. Equity markets still going strong. The S&P up 24.59%, big headlines this last week. The Dow hitting a new high. Interestingly enough, the Aramco IPO, which I thought was going to get shelved, is going forward, but they're going to bring it out and list it on the Saudi exchange. Now, what that means, it's not going public in London. It's not going public in U.S. There's going to be one of two problems. One is that the prince's valuation of $2 trillion is way too high and the Western bankers came in much lower. The other is, I think, there has to be real debate about looking at the real reserves and what the real numbers are on the Saudi oil fields. But what I can tell you is, forget all the hoopla on climate change. The economy runs on oil. The pressure to get that oil and the fight for that oil is going strong. Home builders up 41.52%. The U.S. absolutely plans to stave off recession by turning the millennials into homeowners and doing home formation in a way that really keeps the consumer economy going. Please be prepared to manage a recession anyway. This thing could go in a variety of different manners, but you see little discussion on the housing plan. We've discussed it here for too many in markets. And it's a doozy, and it's absolutely designed to keep the millennials, to turn the millennials into homeowners and keep the economy going for some time to come, 2 to 5 years at least. Anyway, so it's not surprising if you look at the Jews headed into the home building market to see the home builders up 41%. That's a huge increase. VGK, the European ETF, up 19.1%, Germany up 17.41%. We talk in the interview today about the approvals for the Nord 2 pipeline, Germany getting its energy. The developed markets minus North America up 18.54%. The large cap China up 10.34%, small cap up 12.45%. A lot of headlines this week about China slowing. It clearly is. We even see an announcement from the Taiwan foreign minister who was in Washington that if there's a hard landing in China, that the PRC will go to war and try and invade Taiwan. Is that scare talk? China's clearly sort of moving in up to that. Then the emerging markets up 12.88%. If China slows, we're definitely talking about a slowing global economy. It's what Jack Ma said. He said, when trade stops, war starts. Commodities up 6.31%. They've softened up incredibly from the beginning of the year, and that's the slowing economy. Gold up 15.84%. It doesn't take a fool to realize in an emerging multipolar world, the transition is going to be volatile and bouncy, and it's good to have gold. Silver up 13.43%. I want to remind everybody, we've been going back and getting out some of the best of the many precious metals market reports I did with Franklin Sanders and republishing them with a breakdown of the different pieces so you can find the answers to your questions. We just republished the top 10 dates in U.S. precious metals history, which is just a great piece that Franklin and I worked together, and you have it in audio form and also in a transcript, but it really helps you understand the financial and economic history of the United States and the global economy, because you get into all sorts of, the gold market is very, very global. Then oil up 3.9%. Okay, top stories. The JEDI contract has been awarded to Microsoft, and FASB 56 plus the JEDI contract is a very enormous development in the life of the United States. Now, the JEDI contract, they will not onboard it till they go through the protests. We'll see if Amazon protests. If they do, it could take a little bit here, but they'll go through the protest process if it happens, and then they'll onboard. It'll take a while to get the contract really up and running and operational. Now, here's what it means to you when that happens if you live in the United States. it means the appropriation and financial management and control moves out of Congress and out of the federal civil service to a combination of the Secretary of Treasury, the New York Federal Reserve Bank, and members of the Federal Reserve Bank who manage the ESF and the bank accounts as agent for the Federal Reserve, and then a small number, a handful of defense contractors who run the IT systems. The only agencies that will have power are the ones that manage the key data clouds and also run the enforcement. So CIA, Department of Justice will continue to have power. But once this is integrated, it gives you the ability to take the entire federal finances and take them very deep, very dark, very secret, and very, very private. Now, here's what this means to you. You must make your documentation archive a very high priority for 2019. I want you to delete all Microsoft software. I've got all of Office gone. I still have Skype, which I need to get rid of. It's interesting. We tried to load and use Wire, which is a new service from Europe that I really liked, but it just wouldn't work. And our IT team just traced it down and found that every time we were getting on more than one or two of us, it would go through Salt Lake City, big NSA hub, big telecom hubs there, and bust. And it was clearly being sabotaged, I'm assuming, because they want everybody to have to go into the U.S. Software. Anyway, I use LibreOffice for my office software and Thunderbird for email and Firefox for browser. Get Microsoft off your system. So I want you to make your documentation a high priority. I want you to do it without using Microsoft software. And I want you to create multiple real and digital copies of your critical records that cannot be destroyed by theft or seizure in one country or jurisdiction or fire and vandalism in one place. So multiple copies in multiple places, and make yourself sufficiently redundant so you're protected from all theft, governmental action, or fire and vandalism. Now, what does this include? Your financial records, your bank statements, your insurance policies, your brokerage accounts, any assets, any pension benefits, your government records, particularly if you have legal right for pensions, retirement benefits, health care, prove you paid your taxes. We're coming into a period where there will be trench warfare, and the way that the government will save money is by fighting for every penny. I told the story in the pension fund wrap-up about how my pension fund insisted I didn't have a pension fund, even though I had documentation. And I was very lucky. I was able to get a document from the Department of Labor that proved that they had reported to the Department of Labor that I had a pension. But if it hadn't been for an honest government civil service, you know, I could have lost an extraordinary personal financial benefit. Once you privatize the governmental cloud and infrastructure, you know, the dependability of that infrastructure has the potential to deteriorate even rapidly and in extraordinary ways. So you need to be able to document and prove in a court of law that you have the rights to whatever the benefit is. So financial records, government records, you also need to have property records. You need to be able to prove that you own a given property. The people who came back from Katrina or other kind of personal disasters and natural disasters were the ones who had copies of their property records and their insurance. So they had full documentation and could prove that they had insurance. The insurance company couldn't take the position, oh, we don't have a policy for you. Healthcare records, you need to have a copy of all your healthcare records. Remember, he who archives writes history. And this is, again, this is going to be trench warfare. So a government facing explosive costs from healthcare or from disaster capitalism, it's a very different government once it's privatized than the one you dealt with 10 years ago. If you can learn how to be your own doctor, you know, if we run into a situation where someone like Senator Elizabeth Warren gets her way and gives complete government control to the entire healthcare system, the healthcare system is going to be an even more dangerous place to be for those of you who are in the United States. This doesn't apply to Australia or Europe as yet. And I'll do a little beating of the drum for food. We have more reports of farm closings and bankruptcies. I'm very concerned about what the harvest may be and what the crop loss would be. The Hickory Valley cotton gin still humming and running behind in front of my house in Hickory Valley. So the cotton is still coming in, although it was raining today. We have more to do. The integration of FASB 56 and the Microsoft and Amazon clouds at the federal government are now snapping together into place. And once they get operational together, we are talking about the capacity for an accelerated privatization. Now, if there's one guy you have to thank for this, it's Deputy Secretary David Norquist. Norquist ran the audit for DOD that never produced any results, but did produce FASB 56. He's running the adoption and implementation of FASB 56, and he, when the new secretary recused himself from the JEDI contract decision, he led the award of the JEDI contract. And if you look at all these things, you have one person and one office overseeing their implementation, and that's because there's a plan and they're headed in a very specific direction. Wouldn't surprise me if one of the reasons Mattis got dumped was he was likely to choose Amazon. So this has been quite a fight. And as I said, let's hope Senator Warren is not elected. Elizabeth Warren's healthcare plan will give the integrated DOD and Amazon cloud much more power, because now you're talking about everybody in the country with a national ID. They're pushing a national ID as we speak. It is expected to get implemented in the next year because it's required for planes and travel within the United States, essentially an internal passport. And if you integrate that with everyone being under government-owned and controlled healthcare, and it's all integrated into a DOD and Amazon cloud, you're talking about the basis of tremendous fascism. Warren comes out of the Harvard Corporation. She taught at Harvard for years. She pretends to be sort of a naive school marm. She's far more dangerous than Trump. Even Wall Street is alarmed. She was the one who used climate change to help provide air cover for FASB 56. You know, given her role and relationship with the Harvard Corporation Endowment, doesn't surprise me in the least. You can read about it in the ESG write-up on the Will ESG Turn the Red Button Green? What this means is the governance structure, once you get this all in place, the governance structure on the U.S. federal credit and budget will be made up of the owners of the New York Fed member banks, the Harvard and Ivy League endowments, basically the people who manage that money, and the big foundation pools of money and intergenerational pools of money and top investors. Now, not surprisingly, now that they're ready to snap that all into place together, we see Michael Bloomberg preparing to enter the presidential race in the Democratic primary. He would be, you know, if you took this group aside and said, who could we get to run for president that we would like to have there, one of ours, he would be that group's choice. He has good relationships with multiple factions. Can he win? I don't know. He has experience running New York City, so he has more government experience than Trump had had, and he certainly has a much calmer temper. I, for one, would do everything I could to stop Bloomberg from becoming president. It's clear, though, the Democratic funders want somebody emerging who's acceptable to business. They are doing everything they can to stop Bernie Sanders, who Sanders came up as number one among the Democrats in one of the CNN polls. CNN presented the information on their TV, apparently, is switching the numbers between Warren and Sanders. You just can't make this stuff up. Anyway, it looks like we're going to see quite a fluid couple of weeks on the Democratic side. The bottom line, though, is if you can afford to do and learn to do as much of your own healthcare as possible and also create foreign options for healthcare, I think it's worth pursuing now. If you look at the U.S. healthcare system, it's becoming increasingly expensive, increasingly overregulated, and increasingly dangerous. I get horror stories all the time. You really need to take charge of your own health. China has announced they're coming out with a digital currency. They've outlawed Bitcoin, and so the pressure is really on to provide an alternative. They don't want a digital currency that's going to launder money out of the country, and this is how they achieve it. Will be interesting to see how the digital currency works and how attractive it is to digital currency folks outside of China. Looks like the California fires have finally started to slow down. There have been serious power outages. It's clear to me that there is a major reengineering underway. The state is going to, I think it's almost a clear certainty, the state's going to take over PG&E. It's part of establishing total control of the electric grids, and I think the electrical system is about to get reengineered in a major way, and it'll be interesting to see whether part of this is to radically reduce the energy use of the general population. If you want to stay in California, please consider creating your own electrical supply or working with your community to do the same. The California environment has traditionally been very inhospitable to small business, but it's clearly this last 6 months have been more so, and I think it's going to get much worse. Well, Project Veritas came out with a new whistleblower. They've had quite a run this year, quite impressive. And this new one had caught one of the top ABC News hosts off camera talking with her producer about how she'd had the Epstein story 3 years ago, and it had been quashed by the network, and she described the fact that they had Clinton, and that had been quashed. They had Alan Dershowitz, that had been quashed, and they had Prince Andrew, and the palace had done a great deal to quash the story. And then she describes the fact that Epstein had clearly been murdered. It's quite something. She does a very good job of describing the reality of the story. Now, ABC News is owned by Disney, and the two largest investors in Disney are BlackRock and Vanguard. Twitter went all aflood with this story, and they started to attack the ABC host. I jumped on and said, no. You know, one of the stories I told was I had dinner many years ago with somebody who'd been the senior personal assistant to the Disney chairman at the time, and the assistant would bring in the headlines from the news subsidiary, and the chairman would go through and delete and edit them so that nothing was on that gave him political trouble or, you know, made his life more difficult or hurt his stock. So I told that story and then explained, why don't you call up BlackRock and ask them why they're using your money to finance companies that protect pedophiles? And sure enough, as it happened over a year ago, AT&T started blocking all of our emails. So we sent out our update right after I did my little series of tweets. And suddenly, here we are blocked again. So we've put in a complaint to AT&T. But, you know, last time it took us a year to get them to stop blocking our emails. So we're back to email war with AT&T. And it's amazing how tight it is now. What's interesting is several days later, CBS fires the whistleblower. Apparently, whoever was the whistleblower, they now work at CBS. And it looks like the corporate media is thicker thieves. So CBS is firing the whistleblower. But we now have, and again, I think this is the post-FASB 56 reengineering. So Weinstein's down, Epstein's down, Jeff Zucker at CNN has gotten whacked big time, although it looks like he still got his job. Now we've got the ABC and Disney folks whacked, and it, as I said, it looks to me like the Masons are sending the message, we don't need a lot of that money laundering and media folks now. They can just keep everything secret. The other possibility is this is a major hit on the palace and Prince Andrew in the middle of Brexit, so it'll be interesting to see how the palace handles that one. Needless to say, the Brexit furball and the U.S. impeachment furball grind on. The U.S. impeachment is very interesting because let's go back to FASB 56 and the Jedi contract. Congress has now placed itself out of the power of purse. It no longer controls the power of purse. It certainly does on paper, and they're certainly going to go through the motions, but essentially they're out of the appropriation business. It's now controlled elsewhere. We know they're out of approving the wars because we have the executive branch making war all around the world, and I shouldn't even say the executive branch, the deep state making war around the world, and Congress hasn't approved. I interviewed Amy Benjamin this week, and we will publish that next week. She talks about basically how Congress has been moved out of approving treaties. So we're talking about a fundamental reengineering of what Congress is and what it does. And what Congress does is it does distraction, it does PR. It's the great Oz screen. And I hate to say it, a lot of the U.S. impeachment is simply distraction. Right now, there's about zero chance that the Republicans are going to vote Trump out. It's not impossible. His personality can always come up with something that would inspire 20 senators to turn sides. And there's no doubt that the moderate Republican wing is furious with Trump on many different issues. And the people who want war are also furious. But the clear message, I think, from the voters is this is ours to decide. We don't pay you to go in there and fight like children and make politics instead of do our business. Because one of the things that's very clear is the Democratic Congress is not doing the business of government. It's doing the business of fighting over who's in control, and it's too bad. Now, technocracy is growing gangbusters under Trump, and the FASB 56 and the JEDI are just going to put the technocracy on steroids. I mentioned the internal passports. We now see headlines saying that Google is prototyping how to help smart cities put together for-profit social credit. Ugh, ugly. Cardinal Health, as just announced today, is putting aside $5.6 billion for opioid suits. There are more settlements and litigation to come. There was one headline last month that three of the top U.S. distributors, including Cardinal, was trying to do a global settlement for $18 billion. Chile canceled the trade summit, and that's because of the protests. Expect more of that all over the world. There are real serious tensions and pushback against technocracy all over the world. It's going to be interesting to see if sometime in 2020 we all start to realize we're all pushing back against the same thing. Our hero this week is Hallmark's American Humane Hero Dog Award, or the winner of that award. But I wanted to make a dog a hero really because I wanted to celebrate the role of dogs in our life. It's amazing the joy and happiness that they bring. I'm a dog lover, and I know not everybody is a dog lover, but it's extraordinary what they do for us. And at a time when you can't necessarily count on the human race to be what you'd like it to be, we can still count on the dogs to be great companions and great friends and provide all sorts of support and help and safety. I think safety and personal safety is going to become a much more important issue in many parts of the Western world. Certainly in the United States, I think you're not necessarily going to be able to count on police and law enforcement. And there's nothing like a great guard dog or watchdog to help you take care of personal safety. There's also been a spate of articles recently about scientific research showing how much healthier people are if they have a dog. It's quite interesting. And there's also an article I posted, I don't know, about 2 months ago about dogs now working with humans to protect them on health issues. Apparently a dog can tell minutes before it happens if somebody's going to have an epileptic seizure or if they're going to have a heart attack. Dogs are great for your health. They're great for your safety. And so I'm celebrating the dogs in our life. Our blast from the past is something we've used several times before, and that's Ann Williamson on the rape of Russia, both her testimony, and if you link to the testimony in the link in Blast from the Past, you'll get two of the Solera reports we did with Anne. She gives extraordinary background and understanding of what happened with R, the United States' participation and really raping Russia like an invader after the wall came down. And it's important history if you want to understand what's happening in the Ukraine today and all the different politics related to Ukraine. It's also very helpful in helping you understand what disaster capitalism can feel like and look like. It's quite an extraordinary body of work, so I recommend it to you. Ann Williamson on the Rape of Russia. For Let's Go to the Movies, I recommended The New Silk Road, which is from Deutsche Welles, the Germany's public broadcasting company. And it's in two parts, and it does a wonderful job of walking you through the Silk Road project through Eurasia. And I wanted you to see it because for those who can't travel and visit those countries, you really see the scope and dynamics of what is being attempted here. And part of the backdrop to many of the things going in the Middle East and Eurasia, of course, is who's going to own and control the equity on the Silk Road. It's part of the debates going on between the U.S.-China renegotiation of their trade relationship. We got a great comment from a very talented subscriber in Eastern Europe, the written comments. Let me just read it to you. Very interesting documentary about China's expansion. Heartbreaking to see old traditional cultures and ways of life being destroyed by the new brash power. That happened, though, in Eastern Europe, Central Asia, too, no doubt, under the advance of the West after the fall of communism. It's no different for the local culture, whether their way of life is destroyed by the West or China. Same disaster. Just that you cannot find too many sensible documentaries about how it looks to have your city invaded by McDonald's or Starbucks and your culture debased by Disney and Hollywood, as you seem to have about the names of their equivalents from China. Empires will be empires. Old ones will fall, new ones will rise. Not much chance to change that, I think. It runs through history like the scarlet thread of murder. Documentaries like these, while very informative about China's rise, seem oblivious of the effects of the American Empire, or before it, the European empires. A very sad chronicle. Sadder as nothing seems to change much through the ages. Our interview this week is our quarterly report with Saker. It was fascinating. He's always has very good insights on what's going on in the Middle East. We talk a lot about Syria, but we also talk about the Ukraine and poor Saker's frustration with U.S. politics. So things are absolutely fluid and shifting all around the world. So I'm always glad to have Saker back. It's a fascinating discussion. Ask Catherine. Catherine, a lot of crude language in this. You may not be able to use it, but the best criticism of Obama that I've seen. My sense of hope and change currently depends on listening to the Jimmy Dore show. Obama gets $400,000 for each speaking engagement. He is being critical of U.S. voters for not voting. He seems to be a sad parody of himself. Anyway, I watched the video. It's hysterical. Jimmy Dore can be very, very funny. Obviously, there's a lot of the use of the F word. I did post it, but I tweeted it out with a swear warning. There was no mention. I can't believe he didn't mention the fact that the Obamas have bought a $15 million house on the ocean. So there was no mention or attack on, because if you believe in climate change, you don't buy a $15 million house on an ocean. According to the Obama administration models, that house is supposed to be underwater in fairly short order. But the Obamas doing that basically says, you know, climate change is a joke and we know it and we think it and we don't care what you think. We're just going to buy this house anyway because it's all a joke. Anyway, and of course they felt no shame about taking a $60 million book contract from a company that their administration just gave a large contract to. So not to mention giving $24 trillion plus to the banks. That is, in fact, $1 trillion short of our entire pension fund savings. And that is why we have enormous currency debasement, and that is why we have to pretend that there's a major climate change problem to protect the world from hyperinflation by driving everybody's footprint down. Hi, Catherine. I'll be attending your November 15th event in Portland, and then you describe an event you're having before. It sounds fascinating. I'm going to be driving from Hickory Valley. Thursday is Money and Markets Day, so I doubt I'll be available, but it sounds great. I'd love to go. And then you gave some background, and it sounds like we're both part of the Southeastern Pennsylvania Quaker conspiracy. Your grandmother studied at Swarthmore. I have a grandmother and a stepmother and a grandfather that studied at Swarthmore. I have many, many relatives who graduated from Swarthmore. Needless to say, I didn't go to Swarthmore. Anyway, next question. I keep on hearing about a reset from multiple sources, but not a lot of information about this reset will look like, what it'll look like or how to protect yourself financially. I suspect we will have inflation, so I have a large holding of REITs, but these two will crash with the stock market. Then, of course, I have gold, but not physical gold. I do not think I want to survive in a Mad Max world, so I'm planning as if there is a semblance of the current system. We have taken precautions for an interruption in water, food, and electricity. That's very good. I think you've got to stick with real things, things that are enduring, things that are useful, things that are diversified. If you haven't listened to the third quarter equity overview, I would recommend it. Dear Catherine, I've heard rumors that health insurance in certain rural counties in Washington State is not available. The reason given is that health insurance does not want to cover long ambulance rides. Have you heard of this anywhere else in the country? No, but I have heard of lots of reports of, you know, shutting down hospital services, making life much more expensive or difficult for volunteer fire departments, which of course is the condition predicate to then pulling home insurance. Every effort is being made to make the rural areas harder to go to, harder to stay in, and less livable. They're clearly, we're trying to drive people into the cities. Then somebody sent me a map. It was about a day after I tweeted it out, of the America's food supply chain. A professor, I think it's the University of Illinois, put together, mapped out all the sort of trade routes of the food supply, and it's fascinating. I think it's a great contribution. You wanted to know who funded it. If you link to the professor's presentation on their site, it's the National Science Foundation. But of course, because the professor's at the University of Illinois, I'm assuming they were a contributing factor. Hi, Catherine. The Ronan Farrow piece truly resonated with me. That's a piece of Ronan Farrow that involved criticism of Bill Clinton. It seemed to be between the Project Veritas story and Ronan Farrow, it's looks like there's a drumbeat to hold Clinton accountable for some of his violations of the law related to sexual activities. Anyway, I've read a great deal regarding Juanita Broadwick's allegations over the past few decades. She seems to have been abandoned by who we have been led to believe are her feminist sisters, as well as others who stepped forward to accuse Bill Clinton of wrongdoing. They were discarded, as James Carville described them, trailer trash. But my epiphany moment regarding the situation came when Clint was running against Bob Dole for a second term. Patricia Ireland, president of the National Organization of Women, was in San Francisco and being interviewed on KGO Radio on the Ron Owens program. Surprisingly, Owens asked Ireland how could now endorse Clinton, considering Broderick's charges. Ireland explained that now took the charges seriously. Accordingly, they sent a team down to Little Rock to conduct their own investigation. So here it comes, right? Ireland then explained that after taking all the evidence into consideration, now believed that Bill Clinton was guilty of raping Mrs. Broadwick. Wham! I was stunned, as was the show host. Naturally, followed up with the admission by asking how then could now endorse Clinton for re-election. Because we can get more from Clinton than we could hope for with Dole. Yes, it's that simple. From that moment on, I never assumed that any advocacy group was automatically pure. It actually freed me to think for myself. Truly an epiphany. I hope Ms. Broderick finally receives her acquittal and those who ignored or attacked her are held accountable. Me too. It would be so much fun to see Bill Clinton held accountable. So the state of California has at least 150,000 living on the stream, homeless human beings, businesses leaving the state in droves, severely congested freeway, oppressive taxation, gasoline prices almost double that of surrounding states. Now they are threatening to nationalize PG&E after they pass a law completely absolving PG&E of fire liability. Very clever. And this year's round of firestorms also seem to be completely unnatural and being touted as the new normal. Truly crazy. I'm so glad I moved. I hope that we secede from the country soon. No, I don't think you hope that. More on that later. State takeover is going to accelerate the reengineering. There's a major reengineering going on in California, and don't think it's just California because it's coming across the whole country. California's just first. then somebody sent a link to the forensic pathologist announcement that Jeffrey Epstein appears to have been a homicide, not a suicide. And it's so funny to watch the ABC host on the Project Veritas video saying, you know, oh, it was murdered. It's time to, your comment was, it's time to investigate the investigation. I think there's an awful lot here to investigate, not just how Epstein got murdered, but, you know, who's really getting the money, who really had the money, what was the sources and uses on the Epstein money? Because I think a lot of that money came out of HUD. Catherine, this is a wonderful resource that I thought to share. She would be an interesting person to interview, and you sent me a great link to Cheryl Atkinson. Put up a lot of her links to vaccine and medical stories. Cheryl Atkinson is an excellent source. It's an excellent group of links, so I posted. I really appreciate your sending that. Have a wonderful road trip and a great Thanksgiving in the panhandle of Texas. I've been reading the Comanche history of the area, including the Goodnight Loving Trail. Anyway, yes, Atkinson's excellent, and she's definitely on the list to have on the Solaire Report. New question. I've been meaning to ask you about this for years. In one of this year's wrap-ups, you and Joseph talked about the human trafficking at the border, then casually said something about illegal immigrants being used for food. I think Joseph said something like, clearly. Can you kindly elaborate? How and what ways might they be going into the food supply? I'm really sorry for such a gruesome question, but it's been rattling around in my head for months and months. I don't remember the exact reference, but I will tell you I'm very worried about humans getting into the food supply. I would put nothing past organized crime and the push to lower prices. Again, I just stress, when we talked about it, I think I put as the Let's Go to the Movies or mentioned Soylent Green, which we've had in Let's Go to the Movies, but is a sci-fi movie that goes into that distinct possibility. Anyway, I'm worried about organized crime getting human meat into the food supply, and it's one of the reasons I strongly recommend that you set up relationships with ranchers, butchers, and trustworthy sources. I think it's very, very important to make sure that you're getting the kind of quality you need on all the food you eat, but particularly the meat. Next question. This is a screenshot from a station in Dallas, 90,000 structures, aka homes, businesses, wineries. I've seen reports of 80 mile per hour winds and fires spreading way too fast, up to 10,000 acres in only 24 hours, and many quotes like, we've never seen this before. Oh, and one woman said, is this the new normal? And PG&E said the two of their down power lines caused the fire. More reasons why they need to turn off the power to millions of people all over the state. All of it being reported as a natural disaster, repeat from last year. And then there's a picture of the Kincade Fire, which is brutal. Next question. Since there were no indictments on the Democratic side, Clinton, Biden, Obama, or any of the intel agencies, will they be able to take Trump down in an impeachment, and how will this affect the economy? Am I wrong to see this as the globalists who are behind the UN guiding the deep state, pushing for Trump's impeachment? Trump has gotten rid of some UN, such as UNESCO, China owning the ports, and the Paris Climate Accord. I believe this is pissing off the globalists. Let me know your thoughts. I think it's unlikely that Trump will be taken down in the impeachment. It would take 20 senators, Republican senators, voting for impeachment. Very unlikely. And if you look at the people who are unhappy with Trump on the Republican side, I doubt they want to see Pence as the president. So now, if Trump is impeached, I don't think it will have a big impact on the economy. At this point, the economy is running independent of the White House and the sort of Trump politics. That's why it's important you watch what's happening with the Jedi contract and the shift of the tight control of the money into the deep state. So I think the investment world understands that the real controls are elsewhere. There is no doubt that people who wanted to keep globalization going are extremely happy with Trump, and the people who wanted to rebalance back into the United States are very happy with Trump, and I don't expect that to change even if he was impeached. Dear Catherine, I've been a subscriber for a couple years and must say I find Solaire to be an invaluable resource for information and knowledge of all kinds. I feel gratitude for you and your team. Through your presentations and resources, many doors have opened in my life that would not otherwise have been the case. Sometimes one of these gems may even be a passing reference or comment that you make in the context of answering someone's question or imparting your knowledge in other forms that you provide. Thank you. And while I'm at it, thanks also for your support of so many worthy avenues of what is good in the world. I'm writing to share a couple of things with you that you may find helpful to keep in the back of your mind in witnessing the increasing turmoil and destruction and violence that we perceive on Earth. And then you point me to the work of a woman who's been interviewed. Her name is Asha Yana Dion. She's been interviewed by Carrie Cassidy. I went and watched the video that showed Carrie's summary of the work, but I haven't watched the videos. There are three parts, and I think they're about 6 hours long. But I did order one of her books, but I haven't received it yet, so I look forward to learning more. Anyway, I very much appreciate your sending that, and heads up on the different areas of science that it impacts. Let's see. She provided detailed information on the connection between spirituality and science, the quantum physics of our DNA and its chemistry and history, mathematical breakdown and operation of counter-rotating electromagnetic fields surrounding each atom, all the way up to planets and universal systems, and much, much more. Anyway, so those are all areas that obviously we're keenly interested in. Then I repeated something I've addressed before, which is the wonderful subscriber who detailed a lot of information about, forgive me if I mispronounce this, Mehran Qureshi work with all different kinds of scientific technology, but also breakthrough energy. I keep being told by the people I trust that they're skeptical of him, so I have not taken the time to do independent due diligence, but I will keep asking people about it. Now, their skepticism is on the breakthrough energy, not on many of his other areas of work, so I can't speak as to that. New comment. So in all of the shenanigans and setups they're doing on Trump, all of a sudden, Rudy Buttdials, an NBC reporter, just happens to be a reporter who's quick enough to probably illegally record the call, and the topic just happens to be anti-Biden and raising cash. Gee, what a coincidence. Or they just tapped into all his calls to cherry pick the juiciest dirt. Seems we were headed into Banana Republic territory after all. Oh, we're not headed in. We've been in for a while. We're definitely in. Then someone sent, Catherine, this is an excellent documentary on fasting. I've read Dr. McCullough and Dr. Fung, but this is an amazing history of its implementation in the Soviet Union and further research. It's called The Science of Fasting. I posted it. It's fantastic. Now, when I posted it, I got several people giving very prudent warnings about the risks of fasting. It's important to understand the dangers of sort of rapid as the toxins from your fat go into your bloodstream, et cetera, and some of the other problems with fasting. But I thought that was a very inspiring video and unbelievably informative, so I can't thank you enough for sending it. Another comment on the California fires. I just have to say the reports I'm getting from subscribers in California is you're living in a very, very difficult time. And I just want you to know that our prayers are with you. And I would ask everyone on the Solaire Report to keep the people of California and the California subscribers in your prayers, because again, they're taking it on the chin first, but wherever you are, if you're in the Western world, it's probably coming your way. Australia and New Zealand will likely avoid this, but it's doubtful to me that any part of the United States and Europe and even Canada is going to get some of it. Well, that's it for this week. Amy Benjamin up next with Sneaky Treaties, fascinating look at the games being played on international law, and they dovetail exactly with what's going on with the changes in the governance of appropriation, changes in the governance of the how wars are waged. And then the following week, Jason Bowden-Smith on 5G. Jason, as far as I'm concerned, is the best source on the planet because he's both an environmental scientist and a business guy. He's very grounded, very practical, and he can, you know, you're not going to get any fear porn from Jason. You're just going to get the straight story, and he's very focused on solution. He's got a new company, Mito HQ, which is in the business of educating and helping people in very practical ways on how to deal with that, which is exactly the approach we need. And then following that, I have the theme for the currency wrap-up. We have more deep states to do. And then I had a great interview with Thomas Meyer in Chart, which will come up sometime in the next few weeks. Anyway, an unbelievably great lineup coming into Thanksgiving and the holidays. So, ladies and gentlemen, until next week when I talk with you on the road somewhere between here and Portland, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, you need to start one. Good night and good luck.